All right. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Game Over, episode number 5. Arthur, you and I had agreed to do 5 episodes and see how we do.
For me, it's
been fun recording stuff with you, but I don't know, the YouTube algorithm, we're kind of sucking hard on YouTube for some reason.
Well, you know the magic number, number 5, right? I'm sure, like, we got a lot of stuff planned for this podcast after the 5th episode. Okay. So I'm sure we're starting to take off, especially with the algorithm.
Okay, I'm happy to keep rolling if you want to, and maybe we could even try to experiment with some, you know, other formats, bring in some speakers, maybe change things up a little bit. But yeah, I'm happy to keep rolling if you are. And how's your New Year? We're recording here December 31st, New Year's Eve.
The new year has the party has yet to start in 3 hours. We're about to start celebrating New Year's.
Nice.
I'm actually going to celebrate 3 times. Run one for Europe because of my family, and then one for New York City because of my other family, and then one for Seattle technically with my girlfriend. So that's going to be interesting and fun. I'm excited for that. It's going to be a lot of booze and food. Might be in a coma for the next week afterwards. So how about you though?
So for me, I think we're going to go to a friend's place tonight, but I'm probably going to have a pretty kind of low-key New Year's. And the thing that I'm also going to do is I'm probably going to start a 7-day water-only fast starting tomorrow to kick off the New Year. So,
I should probably do the same.
I'm going to start it with suffering because one of the lessons I kind of came to for 2023 is that I do believe that to live a full life, I don't know if you've ever read Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl, who was like a Holocaust survivor, but like one of the things that he mentions is quotes from Nietzsche, who basically suggested that part of life's experience is suffering.
Yeah. The good without the bad. Yeah, you don't know what the good is.
Yeah, to get the highs, you need some lows. Also, I think the research on fasting has been shown to be quite beneficial, especially the older you get. And as the old guy, the oldie but goody, myself, Joseph Kim, new Arthur, the young gun, young blood. I guess let's get to some stuff on games and let's talk charts. What you got?
Well, we got the top Steam charts, and this is actually going to be another story for me to go over later down this episode. But to start with our usual, the top 10 sellers on Steam by revenue, at number one is Baldur's Gate 3 has finally reached first place, up 4 spots compared to last week. With Counter-Strike 2, originally number one last week, has fallen by 1 spot. With number 3 of Lethal Company also falling 1 spot, probably displaced by both Counter-Strike and Baldur's Gate 3. Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3 has fallen 1 spot as well. However, number 5, Elden Ring has jumped 61 places. I think it's the highest we have seen on this podcast. I guess the best explanation is everyone is excited for the potential DLC. I say potential DLC because they don't have a time frame for it yet. The Shadows DLC that might be coming out rumored in February. So we'll see what happens. Cyberpunk is actually climbing once again, number 6 at 21 spots. And this also has to do with another news story, which I'll get into later this episode. Trailing it behind at number 7 is EA Sports Football Club 2024. With Dota 2 and number 8 losing 2 spots. With War Thunder number 9 gaining 5 spots. And the finals is unfortunately not doing so well with its release compared to its like strong out-of-the-door selling on the chart last week. It's currently at number 10 and dropped by a whole 5 spots. How about you? What's going on the mobile side, though?
Yeah, I can jump into mobile. But before that, you know, I just want to make a couple comments on the Steam charts as well. So first of all, it's incredibly great to see Lethal just continuing to stay up there in the top 3. I know, like, the only game that has been able to crack any time with, like, I've got 2 sons that play, like, Valorant all the time. Mm-hmm. And Lethal is the only game that they will play besides Valorant. And I don't know exactly, like, I've seen some of the gameplay. I don't know exactly what's going on, but I just hear screams coming out of their room. So they're having fun.
It's accessibility of the game, really. It really is.
Yeah. And also just a couple of notes on some of the games that made a huge jump, like Elden Ring and Cyberpunk. But both of those games have sold over 20 million units. So these are games that have done really well. So I think Elden Ring hit over 20.5 million units March of this year, and Cyberpunk sold over 20 million units as of September. Now, one game I'm kind of surprised isn't hitting into the top 10 is Diablo. Mm-hmm. I don't know why, but it hasn't quite reached top 10 status, which to me, I would have expected that it would have been jumping up just like Elden Ring and Cyberpunk, but for whatever reason, it hasn't cracked the top 10.
Isn't Diablo being primarily sold on Blizzard's own platform?
Yeah, that's why. Okay, yeah, you got it.
But I swear I've seen it on Steam as well. I swear.
Yeah, probably. But yeah, to your point, I think because there's probably like from a distribution perspective, and because we are only looking at Steam charts, and you can get it. I think most people are probably getting it through Battle.net. So. Yeah, that probably explains it. And so shifting to mobile, we've got Ice Cream 8 making a comeback to number one. Interesting game in that it's very narrative. It's like a puzzle-based narrative game, a kind of game which I would normally not suspect to be as popular as it is, but also it does seem to be getting a lot of downloads on Android. And one of the things that we do note is that some of these games, by the way, did Spider-Man? Yeah, I think that Spider-Man game is finally off the top 10.
It's gone. It's gone.
There's a lot of kind of fishy business happening on the Android side where we're seeing a lot of like downloads that are a little bit suspicious on the Android side. I'm not saying that's the case for Ice Cream 8, but good to see that that game. For a type of game that normally does not do well on mobile, that's number one. GTA San Andreas dropped to number two. Subway Surfers, number three, which is generally in the top five of downloads. Free Fire, also number four, and is also a game that's generally a top downloaded game. Obviously, Roblox is usually up there as well at number five. Then we've got these games like Block Blast Adventure Master at number six, Real Car Driving, Race City 3D 7, Build a Queen, which is a hyper-casual game by Supersonic at 8, and 8-Ball Pool, number 9, and finally Outlets Rush. And we're going to talk a little bit more about 8-Ball Pool. This is a monster of a game in that
really?
It originally launched, I believe, in like 2010 on web, went to mobile in 2013. So it's been a game that's just lasted for over 10 years. It's a game that generates about 100 to over 200K in net revenue per day. And surprisingly, it's a game that initially had, if I remember correctly, because when I used to work as an executive at Sega, I had met some of the guys that worked on the early mobile version of the game. And I believe the original development budget was 100K. And so now you have a game that over the past 10 years has been generating like 1 to 200K in net revenue daily. So that entire development budget. So that's a game that's just like an awesome success story. On the revenue side, we've got Royal Match number one. They are in a tight race with Monopoly Go at number two. Those guys are fighting for UA, and they've been pushing a lot of user acquisition in terms of those two games. Roblox number three, Candy Crush Saga number four, Clash of Clans 5, Coin Master 6. Genshin Impact made a huge jump of 35 spots to 7. Then we've got Gardenscapes 8, Whiteout Survival number 9. Shout out to Century Games. A few of my friends are there. And then we've got Phantom Parade at number 10, which we covered a few weeks back as well.
Right, right.
So, yeah, that's the news behind the top charts. So then jumping into news. And I thought we might as well start by talking about 8-Ball Pool.
Take it away.
Yeah, so as I mentioned, it's been on the mobile app stores for over 10 years. And I'm covering kind of my own post. So I wrote about this in my own Game Makers newsletter. And a couple of the things that I think that they did really, really well and innovated at that time was a couple of really key innovations at the time. The first was this whole notion of a PvP betting mechanic. And now this is a mechanic that actually has been copied successfully in some games like Golf Clash. And there's like a Carom game also that has got massive downloads, especially in emerging countries. But the PvP, they kind of proved that this kind of PvP betting mechanic can actually, is one that is accepted by a casual audience and can monetize really well. And second, one of the key things that you note from playing 8-Ball Pool is just a super, super short tutorial. And so during a time when a lot of these tutorials for a lot of mobile games were like up to like 20, 25 steps, 8-Ball Pool literally has like 4 steps and then you play. It's just like, do this, do this, do this, boom, and you're immediately playing. And so that was those were some of the two key innovations. And beyond that, I think that a couple of the reasons why the game has been so successful is one, is just the very low-end device support. So you're seeing massive downloads, especially from emerging countries, from LATAM, Southeast Asia, from India, because it can run on so many low-end devices. And finally, it does a really incredible job with merchandising, meaning like the kind of sales that they run at lower price points. So for like $199 or $299, $499, hitting different price points for players, especially in emerging markets. And then they did a good job of when Battle Pass became popular, popularized by Fortnite, that then they created a Pool Pass, and they were one of the games that were effectively able to use something like a Battle Pass in their mobile game. So anyway, I think there's a lot of room to run for, and a lot of lessons that 8-Ball Pool has, where, especially if there's anyone in our audience coming from a smaller studio, like this PvP betting mechanic applied to different types of gameplay and having this kind of this view towards lower end device support for emerging markets, I think is going to be a winning formula for success that some small gaming studio, I think, will probably capitalize upon in 2024, 2025. But it definitely has not been fully commercialized. This model has not been fully exploited by game developers. So I think especially for small game developers, this is something I think that more studios should consider. I don't know. Do you have much experience playing 8-Ball Pool? Any
no,
thoughts?
Okay. We've always been playing like Candy Crush or Sandy Subway Surfers most of the time.
Yeah.
I'm surprised the game's simple as 8-Ball Pool. I mean, it makes sense. It's a timeless classic game in the mobile format.
Yeah.
It's doing so well. Guess pool is really here to stay.
especially with the
profits. Yeah.
That PvP betting mechanic, I think, is pretty golden. But speaking of Subway Surfers, you know, as a guy who's actually, so I've actually had oversight over two of the top shooters in the world. So when I was at Sega, Sonic Dash, which is, you know, is one of these games that has gotten over a billion downloads. And then when I was at NBC Universal, overseeing a portfolio, including Minion Rush, which is also very, very successful and has gotten over a billion downloads. And I do think that one of the things that we see is that for these runner games, it gets massive organic. So if you get the right formula in terms of like theme, the gameplay is pretty basic, right? So I do think that, again, for a smaller studio, whether it's 8-Ball Pool or even I think there's room to run in for runners, where if you get the right formula, I think someone that makes a good runner game can actually be very successful because of the massive amount of organics and where ad revenue is going today. It's a pretty big opportunity that if you do ad revenue monetization right, so you're not too, you know, over. You don't overly integrate too much stuff to annoy your users, but if you do it in a tasteful way and balance it properly, I think that can be also a big opportunity for small gaming studios rolling into 2024. So if you're a small game dev studio out there, think about some of these models because I do think there's a lot of opportunity in either of those categories. All right, next news article. So Reuters recently posted an article titled, Sony Activision Repost Will Involve Mobile Gaming. And I actually didn't know what repos meant. I was like,
I just looked it up, actually. Okay. I actually, as right before you started the article, I was like, what the hell does that mean? Yeah. And I got the definition pulled up here.
All right, what's the definition? All right.
The definition is, there's two definitions. Quick, clever reply to an insult or criticism, or two, a quick return thrust following a parry. So I assume it's the first one.
Right. So like in fencing, a repost is like a parry. And so I think what they mean is that Sony Activision will kind of rebound and kind of move into mobile gaming in 2024. And that was like the main focus of the post, was to suggest that both Sony, and by Activision, I think they really mean Microsoft, which recently acquired Activision, would be actively seeking to acquire mobile gaming studios in 2024. And essentially the main argument that Reuters makes is that, for example, Sony commands about half of the gaming market for console, which is about a $60 billion market size, according to Ampere analysis. However, the mobile gaming market, at least according to Newzoo, is much bigger at $90 billion. And so what they're saying is that since Sony already controls, and Microsoft, a big part of the console gaming market, mobile represents a huge opportunity of growth for them. And some of the potential targets that they mentioned are basically three targets. Sweden's Stillfront Group, which was worth around $600 million earlier this month, and owns about a dozen mobile game studios. Tokyo-listed Gung Ho, which is a game company that has generated over $1 billion-plus in game revenue, mainly behind their game Puzzles and Dragons. And finally, Roblox. Now, I think Roblox is a little bit much, right? Yeah. Like it's got about a $28 billion market cap, so acquiring Roblox is a bit of a stretch. And we'll see what happens next year. I do think that it's not from a lack of interest in growing mobile, but I do think, and we kind of talked about it in previous podcast episodes, where I personally feel like the environment for M&A does seem to be down a little bit in 2024 and currently. And I do think that there may be some opportunity for some small pickups for larger studios who are trying to show revenue growth in a difficult market. But generally, and especially in China, the kind of outlook for mobile is just really, really negative right now. So I don't expect a lot of big deals in 2024 personally. And I just don't think that there are a lot of viable targets for Sony or Microsoft. And with respect to Sony, after the acquisition of Savage Game Studios last year, that was supposed to be like their foray into mobile gaming. And actually, Savage was founded by actually my old podcast host from the Deconstructor Fun podcast, Mishka Katkoff. Word on the street was that part of the acquisition of Savage was to leverage Mishka's popularity from that podcast to help push forward a mobile M&A strategy. But since his departure, I would assume that's no longer the scenario there. And they have also backed off of a lot of aggressive plans for live services games. And I assume that mobile would also be a little bit down for them, or at least their strategy they may be backing off of.
Right.
But I don't know, for you, Arthur, with respect to a console game studio or a platform company like Microsoft or Sony also being involved in mobile, like as a player, as a gamer, I don't know. For me personally, I don't really care if there's mobile or console or if there's any synergy between the two. I don't really see that much synergy. But I know for you, do you think that there's any advantage in Sony or Microsoft also being in mobile?
I don't really think so either. I feel like they're just trying to expand to a market that has a lot of potential, but I feel like they're trying to expand too wide. Like a wide as a lake, but deep as a puddle type philosophy at this point. Uh-huh. I never knew Microsoft or Sony could making good like mobile games ever. I mean, we've seen the forays into like the Xbox Kinect or the PlayStation Move. Wasn't exactly a top seller. It's just most people buy products from those respective companies as console companies, really, such as the PlayStation and Xbox, I don't really see them having so much success in the mobile market. But I mean, like, I don't think they'll exactly have losses, but I feel like it's just a focus that they shouldn't even really think about at this point, especially in such a recessive gaming industry economy at the moment.
All right. Next game news article. So according to the Game File newsletter, the author of a recent Axios article interviewed outgoing Nexon CEO Owen Mahoney and asked him about the games industry. And Mahoney had essentially a huge warning. He was warning that basically, quote, nobody in the industry is happy. So just for the audience, Nexon is a South Korean gaming company that owns the studios that make the game Dave the Diver and Embark, the studio that created The Finals, which we've talked about a fair amount on this podcast. So in that interview, Mahoney basically warns that the game industry has gotten to the point of just focusing so much on these mega game projects that he feels that this kind of structure is creating an environment where these games then, based upon these mega game projects, lack innovation and just aren't very fun. And he basically warns that in his experience, this move towards these $100 million plus game projects causes these kind of structural problems that he thinks needs to be addressed. And in this scenario, so game developers, executives, and gamers, he claims, all become not very happy with the outcomes in the process. And with these mega game projects, he basically argues that, for example, game executives and development directors essentially wind up becoming HR managers, managing teams of 500 or even up to 1,000 people rather than actually working on game product. So instead of this model, he warns that the industry should actually move towards smaller budgets, maybe an order of magnitude lower, so maybe low double-digit millions, with smaller teams that focus more on innovation and collaboration. And he then highlights the Embark model. So the Embark, the studio that made The Finals, as a team that is representative of this better model. And the Embark team has, I think, 100 developers rather than 500. And just to be fair, though, some commentary from me, I think The Finals actually came in at over $100 million budget, I believe. So yeah, it doesn't quite prove his point, but I agree that games don't necessarily need to be these huge mega game projects. And I think one of the, for me, one of the really great stories and narratives of 2023 were all of these really great games that were made by solo or very small game development teams, right? So Lethal Company. which we talked about, solo game developer, right? BattleBit, three guys, Valheim, four guys. And so there's some really great recent examples that these solo or small dev teams can achieve massive success and create highly successful games without the mega game projects. Right. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that, Arthur.
I was actually browsing X, almost call it Twitter, this morning. And I saw this meme, which was illustrating this problem. Like, you know, games cost so much, yet you get so little nowadays. People were showing off, like, here's Grand Theft Auto San Andreas, still has a huge legacy. Almost 20 years later, the budget, $10 million. And they're comparing it to the release and reception of the latest Saints Row game, which costed over $100 million to make. And that game was dead on arrival and flopped. In fact, it was actually free on Epic Games for a day yesterday. So basically, barely a year after its release.
Right.
It makes a lot of sense. Like, a lot of people, especially on Reddit, are saying, like, you know, these cool graphics are great and all, but, like, do we really need it? Do we really need these expensive looking games? Just give us a game of good gameplay. You don't hear, I've never seen a single comment or even Steam review about Lethal Company's graphics. People are just like, yeah, this game is fun. That's it. I think that's what most developers, no, not developers. I feel like it's a publisher issue. They all miss out on the, like, what actually makes a game good. And it results in these high budgets.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's going to be space for both, right? Where there's going to be space for some of these mega game projects, whether it's like a GTA type game or like a Genshin Impact, right? I do think that structurally, though, this is bad news for, I think it's good news for like small Western developers, but bad news for big Western developers. Because I think that if you're a Western developer, I think you're closer to innovation, you're closer to understanding the audience. And so if you're a solo or small team, and you know, we've got AI coming in too, that's just going to just even turbo accelerate your ability to make great content or to fill in content treadmill, then you're going to be able to compete as a solo or small dev team with much bigger teams. But at the same time, you've got these like these Chinese game studios like Game Science that's making Black Myth Wukong. You've got MiHoYo, which is, you know, $100 million initial dev budget and then $200 million a year. Plus they've got, you know, a quarter of the costs of a Western game studio. So like, I just think it's going to be really, really difficult for some of these European and US, these Western big budget studios. I think like, I think for, you know, I hope I don't get too much hate for this, but I think like studios like Ubisoft are going to have to, you know, they're going to have to figure out whether their model is viable anymore, because I think with these rising like Chinese game studios, that big budget, big production game, they're just not going to be competitive anymore, in my opinion. But it's great for the smaller Western game dev studios, the guy who's going to make the next Lethal Company.
Right. I mentioned, like, I think on our very first podcast episode, I was like, you know, this is going to be the paved way for indie games, the industry, to take off and overtake AAA games, because consumers are starting to prefer indie games way more because it's what games are at its core. Doesn't have all this fancy-smanchy, big budget, action blockbuster, cool flicks in the entire game. It's just, here's a game. You play as four guys on the planet called Lethal Company, go out and collect scrap. There's no tutorial, have fun. And everyone does have fun. That's the key.
Yeah, and I think what we've been seeing, especially in Steam, I remember talking to an executive earlier this year about how so much of the market now on Steam is searching for games outside of the top 50. So there's like this receptivity and I think this point that Owen Mahoney, one part of what he's saying is right, is that some of the bigger budget games maybe aren't as innovative, which then leaves the path forward for these smaller guys to come up with new innovations, Lethal Company and these other type of new gameplay models that then can, you know, find an audience for itself. And with the way that influencers are now being able to drive so much marketing for these smaller games, if somebody comes up with something cool and influencer picks it up and promotes it, then yeah, these games can really take off really, really fast.
It's you know, Fortnite's being really smart about this entire industry change, because like we covered in the last episode, I believe, Fortnite's becoming this platform of indie games, essentially. Mm-hmm. It's they're preparing for the long-term future. And this is just an obvious sign showing off like, yeah, smaller games are going to be the oxymoron-wise, the big thing now, the bigger games.
Right. Yeah, and from what I've heard, at least from last year, is that according to someone who was working at Epic, he had mentioned that if you're doing anything at Epic, you have to show how whatever you're working on is going to support the metaverse as an initiative. So like, I do think like platform, metaverse, anything like that at Epic is what they're completely focused on. So to the point about it being a platform that can serve to, that can serve smaller creators to create stuff and to plug into Fortnite as their metaverse platform, I think they're just going to invest, they're going to continue to invest in those type of things. And I do think UEFN is still a little bit early. Like when I talked to some Roblox guys who have also tried to develop for UEFN, it still seems like it's a little bit too limited in terms of like still not being able to save, lack of things like physics. Like you can't build, let's say you want to build 8-ball pool, in UEFN right now. You just can't do it. So hopefully that stuff gets resolved. And if it does, then I do think that the UEFN and Fortnite platform will be much more vibrant and much more capable of supporting more interesting games and creators on UEFN Fortnite.
I mean, that's pretty cool to hear about their initiative that they do at Fortnite, because I heard rumors from staff of Roblox, the ones who, you know, pioneered the whole metaverse brand in the first place, that they're dropping the entire scheme of it all. Like, they're not a metaverse platform anymore. They want to move on from it. I guess they just didn't find that much success, but it seems like Fortnite is about to. That's just rumors I heard from staff internally.
Yeah. Well, I think probably Roblox is probably my feeling is Roblox is probably going to focus more on margins and trying to get more profitable. I mean, they've had a lot of difficulties with that. I do think I can believe that rumor that you're talking about, just because when you look at the financials, Roblox is not doing that great.
So it's not unfortunately. Yeah. And with the latest developer conference they had this year, they kind of just sort of, they still had a metaverse theme going on, but they sort of just inched it down a little, like saying, well, it's not entirely all metaverse. It's about bringing people together. When the past two conferences I've been to, it's all been metaverse that, metaverse this. We're building the next Second Life. Not the game Second Life. We mean literally the next Second Life. This is where people have graduations and concerts.
Right.
It looks like they're dropping it this year, unfortunately.
Right. So to be more of like a social platform, I think what they're doing is they're adopting more of the Mark Zuckerberg metaverse vision, which is to be like a social platform where you can just bring a bunch of people together in the same shared space, is what it seems like they're kind of transitioning towards. All right. So last article that I'll bring up is basically from Sportskeeda, which published a post yesterday about the top 5 FPS games to play on mobile for 2024. And as a guy that's working on an extraction shooter for mobile, this is certainly of a little bit more interest to me. And so the 5 games highlighted by this article include at number 5, Polygon Arena Online Shooter. And this is a game developed by a small studio called Serious Games. It's basically a casual FPS shooter with cartoony graphics. It was launched this past October, so a couple months back. And it's only available currently, however, on Android. I checked out some of the gameplay videos for the game, and seems like it's primarily a TDM-oriented, very fast action casual shooter. Seems pretty cool. I do think that the success of the game does seem pretty limited for now. I mean, not to say that it can't be successful, but just like, you know, for calling for our top 5, I think it's, you know, it's kind of barely in that top 5 for me personally, but, you know, it's probably worth checking out. At number 4, the article suggests checking out Tom Clancy's Rainbow Six Mobile. And this one seems to be kind of higher production value game that is like a tactical shooter, meaning more like Valorant with hero abilities and gadgets. That's what I could kind of discern just from the trailer videos, but we will
see. That's pretty much it.
Okay, we'll see how that goes. I think that Ubi has been having some issues with extraction, so we'll see how they do. But as with anyone, good luck to them. Number 3 is the one that I've been excited to see, which is Call of Duty Warzone Mobile, which is slated for launch spring of 2024. This is a mobile version of the PC Battle Royale game with Verdansk and Rebirth Island as playable maps on launch. The game has actually been in beta in 5 countries so far. And I feel like this game should do pretty well. Well, we'll see.
I hope it will.
Some of the reviews that I've seen on YouTube seem pretty good, and we'll see. Number 2, Valorant Mobile. Obviously, Valorant is a monster game on PC side. And according to the article, they suggest that rumors are indicating that a beta version may be released next month in January. There's already a Chinese version in beta. Let's see. I know the game, from what I've heard, Just word on the street is that it's gone through a number of iterations with Tencent and Riot. But as one of the most popular shooters on PC, there are obviously super high hopes for this game. That because it's backed by Riot, we know that if it does launch, that it should be a very high quality product. Riot generally does not launch any game that they don't have confidence can become a billion-dollar game. So if it launches, and I'm not saying that it won't launch, but I'm just saying that, you know, it's a difficult game to make for mobile, and it's definitely very, very difficult. They also, in what I think is a mistake, if I've read the article correctly, they're suggesting that the game will not have aim assist. So I hope they don't make the same mistake they made with Wild Rift, which is trying to create more of a competitive game for mobile. For mobile, that's a mistake. You don't want to try to create competitive gameplay. You want to orient around progression and not for competitive PvP. You want to create the perception of being competitive on mobile, but you do not want to make a competitive game for mobile. Just because of the limitations of, you know, you can't create high skill cap with limited, input controls and things like that. So anyway, all right. So finally, SportsKita lists season 2 of Arena Breakout and number 1. So for those of you in the audience who don't know, Arena Breakout is an extraction shooter launched earlier this year, and it does seem to be the best performing extraction shooter on mobile so far. So I looked up some of the numbers on data.ai. According to data.ai, it does about 150K to about 200K in net revenue per day, which would actually be pretty good. But when we look at the data, when we look at the revenue itself, the vast majority of the revenue comes from China, where Tencent actually just dominates the market, right? And so like Tencent can make any game do well in China. And so I would say, okay, and even if it, let's say it does well in China, I would say from a Western market perspective, I think Arena Breakout is going to be pretty limited. I think that they tried, so when I played Arena Breakout, I think they just tried way too hard to create a realistic gameplay experience. They basically looked at Tarkov, like even some of the maps are just exactly from Tarkov, right? And they're like, okay, we're going to make a hardcore Tarkov-like game for mobile. I don't think that's what players want, right? And so like, it's so freaking hardcore. Like even like the way that they do the inventory where you have to get a gun and a clip and like a rig, and then you have to load ammo into the clip. And it's like, fuck, you know, like what the heck? It's so complicated for mobile. And I was just like, dude, this is not a good fit. But anyway, so SportsKita has listed Arena Breakout as number 1. I would argue if Valorant mobile launches, that should be number 1. Otherwise, it should be Warzone mobile. But so you know, I would kind of differ with SportsKita on this, but certainly think that Arena Breakout, you know, I would say at least on the China side is doing all right. I don't think it's number 1, but according to SportsKita, that's number 1. And I don't know, Arthur, do you play? I don't think you play many mobile shooters, right? You're more kind of PC, console?
Yeah, absolutely. When I think of shooters, I think of PC, but like on mobile games, like you said, I play progressive casual games. I can play on the subway in New York City without having to compete for something, much like Valorant players or Rainbow Six players. Not sure how it's going to go on mobile. Call of Duty Warzone makes a lot of sense. It's a fun open progressive shooter, so I'm excited for that. Absolutely. I think I will definitely shift my attention more mobile after that releases next year. And cool. For all folks listening right now, Kim mentioned about Valorant being a esports game on mobile. We did discuss a lot about that in diff in the previous episode, just a little quick shout out there. But are you like looking forward to any of these 5 games?
Yeah, I mean, I think the one that I have to check out for sure is Warzone Mobile. And then if Valorant releases in spring, as per some of the rumors, according to that article, then definitely want to check it out. Interestingly, though, Apex Legends Mobile actually had like a Valorant type of tactical shooter mode called Hack. And they put it in and then they took it out. So it just could be that like tactical for mobile might be a difficult kind of shooter subgenre to implement. I'm not saying that it can't work or that, you know, maybe there was something with this specific implementation or the execution by the Tencent team from that, that made Apex Legends mobile. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I would say at least the early indications is that it's going to be difficult to do tactical on mobile.
Right. I think we'll both have to pan out and see how it goes. Cause we're both curious. Well, you know, you mentioned earlier on your side of the article, how Tencent pushing the game in China.
Yeah.
Well, I got an article for you that actually goes back towards our topic in the last episode about how the Chinese government recently drafted that law regarding regulations of video games, especially ones that have like those daily login tokens and whatnot. Well, they actually responded back to the backlash from like companies such as Tencent. And they have responded on the WeChat app saying, no, we do actually like games. We think it's actually, let me read you exactly what they said on WeChat. Give me a second. It is. Okay, so the Game Working Committee of China Music and Digital Association, the National Press and Publication Administration issued a statement on its WeChat social media, and this is according to AP News, saying there were positive signals that support the prosperity and healthy development of the online game industry. And of course, doesn't really reflect the market share we covered last week, as NetEase's trade shares fell 16.1%, and Tencent closed 12% lower. But of course, in response to that, to show off that they do like video games, they have started approving a lot of games this past week. In fact, 105 games. And coming from Tencent's side, this is such games as Counter War Future. And from NetEase's side, is Firefly Assault. These are a couple of the games that were recently approved. And I feel like this is more so a PR statement saying we don't hate games, we're not banning games. I'm not sure, like, has it been affected in your products or, like, friends in the industry?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there was a lot of talk about this when the news initially came out. And so we did talk a little bit about how they were starting to walk this back a little bit. So it's good to see that they have officially kind of responded about walking this back, at least to some degree. The fact of the matter is that in China, games just monetize dramatically higher than in the West. And so while I think it's unfair that the Chinese market is closed off for a lot of US games, the ones that do make it there can actually make tons of money if done right. So, I hope that China does not go overboard in terms of like the government and the governing body, the NPPA, around overly restrictive requirements, but on spending and things like that, and kids' time and things like that. But if to the extent that the market can remain unrestrictive and can remain more open, then I think that that would just be better for the games industry overall, just because of how huge the Chinese gaming market is. And, you know, sometimes you'll see like the same game with maybe a conversion of like call it 2% here in the US, can have a conversion of like 10% in China. And the monetization, like ARPU, average revenue per paying user in Japan relative to the US has often been double, and China's right around that mark as well. So it's an important market. Hopefully it's open. Hopefully it's less restrictive. And hopefully in the future, the other thing change I'd like to see is for them to be more open to Western games entering that market as well.
Right. And for our audience out there, for context, the industry size in China in terms of sales is 42 billion as of this year. And in terms of how many people are playing, 668 million gamers exist in China's domestic market, which is an outstanding number. Just goes to show how big this like closed off market is. So that's it from AP News. there's some more negative news for games, technically, in this this no. manner, actually. This is going back to the West. You remember Starfield, how that came out to some, like, massive reception, positive reception for, like, news outlets. I'm not sure what happened. Well, actually, I dug into this more, but to sum it up from Kotaku, Starfield has dipped from mixed reviews at release to over a couple months later being mostly negative. It is at the bottom of the barrel in terms of ratings on the Steam charts. Now, it's not the day before, if you remember that game, the one that had false marketing. It's not that stooped low, but it is very low right now. And the reviews have been responded to by Bethesda. One review was talking about how there is no reason to explore planets. Everything is a soulless, repeating chore. And these are like paragraphs and essays on like why Starfield sucks, according to the gamers. Bethesda had these responses to each review, which a lot of people point out saying is humorously like the corporate moniker that they make fun of in the Starfield story itself. And this example post reads, "Greetings, thank you for your time and leave a review for Starfield. You can fly, you can shoot, you can mine, you can loot." This is a response to a negative Steam review, by the way. "Starfield is an RPG of hundreds of hours of quests to complete and characters to meet. Most quests will also vary in your character skills and decisions, massively changing the outcome of your playthrough. Try creating different characters' backgrounds, characteristics, and clash." It just goes on more and more about it's pretty much the back box on description of the game. Even after completing the main story, your adventure doesn't end. You can continue on New Game Plus, keep exploring Starfield and all of that is out there. Never stop exploring Bethesda customer support. And of course, this only prompted a lot more negative reviews with people saying the exploration is boring. And this is a sudden thing. I mentioned earlier, it's like, why did it become so negatively reviewed? Apparently, it's because of Cyberpunk. Because if you look into the other reviews for Starfield, people are mainly saying, just buy Cyberpunk, ignore this game. So Cyberpunk's latest updates that they've been releasing into the game alongside its DLC they successfully launched back in September has prompted the drop in Starfield's reviews. And Bethesda is attempting to fight back with the responses I just mentioned. But of course, that's getting more flack because it doesn't seem that genuine. So this was just on my feed recently. I'm surprised to see, but within a week, Starfield went from mixed to one of the lowest rating games on Steam right now.
Wow, that's crazy.
This is
part of what Owen Mahoney was talking about.
Budgets, big games.
I don't know. The production cost of Starfield is a whopping $200 million.
What? Okay. I'm a huge Bethesda fan. I will defend them, but it did not feel like $20 million.
Whoa. Actually, on Reddit, they're saying Starfield budget at $400 million.
I don't believe that. If it's $400 million, it's double than Grand Theft Auto 5. That's actually, I do not believe that, but $200 million, that's crazy. That is actually crazy because the game, have you played it?
I haven't.
So the game,
with marketing, it's around $400 million. That's what they're saying.
That's crazy. That is crazy.
So the development budget is $200 million, 500 member dev team. And then with marketing, all in costs are $400 million. So that's what, according to this Reddit post and Xputer article is suggesting. But yeah, it sounds like this is the thing that Owen Mahoney is alluding to is games like Starfield.
For everyone listening right now, the budget of Grand Theft Auto 5 was $200 million. Right. Just for a reference, by the way. I thought Starfield was okay, but I would not believe that was $200 million in budget because the gameplay is very outdated. The graphics are super outdated because of the game Braille engine that they still use. And of course, the main issue everyone elicits with the game is like, it's boring. There's nothing else to do.
Right.
I mean, have you checked it out yourself?
I have not.
It is It's an okay space game if you want to kill some time. Like, the exploration is pretty fun. But, like, it does get very boring after a while, because when you go to another planet, you realize it's empty and empty. And this is what the main hallmark of most Steam reviews are. Fact, in an interview, according to Kotaku, Todd Howard said, well, the moon was empty, but the astronauts weren't bored when they landed on it. That was actually a justification given by Todd Howard, the director of the game at Bethesda. And of course, that was met with more backlash. So Starfield is not looking too hot, and its PR is getting really worse. I don't know why you would justify saying, well, we purposely made it boring for $200 million. I wonder how Elder Scrolls 6 is going to stack up to this. But going from the now worst, one of the worst rating games, and not even top selling games on Steam, we went to the complete opposite side. Regarding Steam, as Valve revealed its best selling games of 2023 in this article by GameRant, which they thoughtfully have organized for me to read off. So, the top 12 selling games of 2023 comes with Sons of the Forest, which is a sequel to The Forest. It's like a open world multiplayer game, survival game. It's pretty interesting, pretty nice. I'm actually surprised to see it as number one, but it's one of those YouTuber games that would have such a spot. And then Starfield actually is number two best-selling game of Steam in 2023. So that is giving you a huge scale of how many negative reviews are exactly out there, right, if it's somehow mostly negative on Steam. Behind that is Baldur's Gate 3, which took away the Games Awards show this year in December. Yep. And after that is number four, Apex Legends, continues to retain its top 10 selling spots on Steam. After that is Lost Ark. And then next is Hogwarts Legacy. Afterwards is Destiny 2, followed by Cyberpunk 2077. Then Dota 2. And next to Dota 2 is PUBG Battlegrounds. And then here's a tricky one, Call of Duty. Think about this one. It's combining Modern Warfare 2, 3, and Warzone as separate games. So it's combining statistics from three separate products on Steam into one. It's a little tricky of a placement there. And then at 12th place is Counter-Strike 2. Have you checked out any of those 12 games? Because I've seen all of them personally myself. I did enjoy Sons of the Forest, but I'm surprised it's number one in terms of selling.
Yeah, I haven't played that one. Probably of those games, the only ones I've really checked out are the shooter ones, right? So like Apex Legends I've played. You know, I actually, if we keep this podcast rolling, I actually did meet the overall director of Lost Ark at GDC last year. Oh. Now he can't speak English, so we would need a translator. But if we keep this rolling, he did agree to do a podcast if we can get a translator.
What language does he speak?
Korean.
Okay. I had a Korean girlfriend, so I can't bring her on, but I do actually have a Korean friend. I could probably find someone, actually.
We're going to need to increase our YouTube numbers before we reach out to him, but yeah.
Well, I mean, an interview with him would definitely increase the YouTube numbers for sure.
That's true, too.
It's an investment. Here, his $50 is some pizza. Can you please translate for us? All right. Speaking of translate, I'm going to translate Nintendo's most reviewed downloads on the Nintendo Switch. So number one is, I actually do not know how to pronounce this, so forgive me, is Soika Game? Have you heard that?
No. How do you spell it?
It's S-U-I-K-A. Suika. Game.
Okay.
What is that, actually? Hold on. Sorry to interrupt this broadcast, but I'm curious. It's a play a watermelon game online.
Yes. Yeah, Suika means watermelon in Japanese.
Oh. This is number one on Nintendo Switch? It's a Japanese puzzle game. Interesting.
Yeah, well, I'll have to try it.
I have to actually check it out too. I got my Switch with me. It's number one on the Switch charts in terms of most downloaded in 2023. So much so it beats out number two, Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom.
What?
That's what I had to like take two. Like, why is that number one and not Zelda? Yeah. Interesting. Number three is Pikmin 4. Fun, great game. Worthy of its place. Number four is Super Mario Bros. Wonder. Have not touched it, unfortunately. Number five, Dragon Quest Monsters. The Dark Prince is solidly secured number five. With number six, Mario Kart 8 trailing behind it. And afterwards, number seven, Splatoon 3. And number eight, Overcooked 2. With number nine being Super Mario RPG. And number 10 being Fire Emblem Engage. Number 11, Monster Hunter Rise. And number 12, still going strong, Zelda Breath of the Wild. Next up for best-selling games for console this year. This one was hard to compile, so I actually found an article from PS Extreme Community founded PlayStation-based news article that totaled up from Sony's interactive map that they released reviewing PlayStation's experience this past year. It doesn't tell you on paper statistically what is what, but according to the article, the most popular games on PlayStation per region this year, in 17 regions, the most popular game was, believe it or not, Fortnite. And the most common ones it trailed behind was Grand Theft Auto 5, Call of Duty, once again, the combined three, Warzone 2 and 3, and of course, FIFA 23. In South Korea, though, number one, alongside Japan, actually, South Korea number one in Japan is Diablo 4, Genshin Impact at number two, and Elden Ring at number three. I'm actually surprised Elden Ring is not more popular in Japan. But I guess there's more of a scene for Diablo in Japan. It makes sense in South Korea, but I didn't know Japan had a huge affinity for Diablo.
Yeah, I think Japan generally will skew, like in the US for console, the number one genre has always been shooters. But in Japan, mm-hmm. it's always been RPGs as number one.
Interesting.
And then, you know, kind of like competitive RTS type games for Korea are generally number one. So,
the only other regions that do not, again, this is not a statistical drop down. I have to manually look at this. Aside from those other regions, the only ones that are different is with South America. Number one is FIFA 23. And then in the Middle East, number one is FIFA 23. So that's the summary of, that's the summary of the best selling games on PlayStation this past year, although it's by region, but the overall summary is that Fortnite is number one on PlayStation, unless you're in the Middle East or South America.
My takeaways from what you just covered is that I didn't realize there was a new Dragon Quest, so I'm going to have to get that.
I'll be honest, I didn't know either.
I'll have to also check out the Suica game. So maybe we can both try that out and we can report next week in terms of
what you've been playing. Dude, I'm actually surprised there's a new Dragon Quest. I've never heard this. I feel like it's an Asian release, probably like an East Asia release, like a Japan only region lock game.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll check it out. If it's, well, looks like it was released December 1st. So,
I have not heard of it. I'm a Dragon Quest fan.
Yeah, same here. Oh, it looks like it's available. Yeah, I'm getting it. I'm going to get it today.
Yeah, I'll get right to this podcast. I'm skipping the New Year celebration with my family. Screw y'all. I'm going to play some Dragon Quest. Wow. Yeah, we learned a lot today from that. But another thing our audience definitely have to know is that today on this podcast, Ghost Runner is free on Epic Games. So you got 24 hours left to go download. So just a fair warning to everyone that's listening right now. But that sums up from my side when it comes to like top selling games this year. Got one more article here to wrap up this podcast episode. And honestly, it's probably the perfect article to wrap up gaming in the year of 2023. And that is from The Verge. The title says it all. 2023 has great games that were overshadowed by the biggest topic here, layoffs. According to The Verge, in 2023, 9,000 people, estimated 9,000 people were laid off from the gaming industry. It's unofficial figures, but it's the estimate. We had in September Epic Games laying off 830 employees. And then we had Bungie, I believe, laying off around 500 employees around the same time. What else? I'm trying to remember, but also reading through this article.
There were just layoffs all over the place.
This article is all over the place. So actually about layoffs. Hasbro laid off 1,000 employees, especially, unfortunately, with the Baldur's Gate 3 team with Lauren Studios. EA laid off 6% of its workforce. So that's around 780 people. Microsoft, Bungie, Naughty Dog, Ubisoft, Amazon, BioWare, CD Projekt Red, Sega, Unity, and Activision Blizzard are just a few of the gaming studios, according to The Verge, that have suffered through layoffs. And this year showcased the biggest economic recession in terms of work in the gaming industry. And it's crazy. I feel like we talked about layoffs so much in this podcast. It's just been, I think, the biggest topic. I mean, do you know anyone who's been personally affected? Because I know a few, no, way more than a few people that got affected, especially at Bungie.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I don't know of anyone really close, but you know, I don't have that many close friends. But on LinkedIn, you know, you see a lot of posts about people getting laid off, and definitely feel for them. I do think though that the games industry overall, I mean, from a downloads perspective and from a growth perspective, I do think like console and PC are relatively flat. Mobile on a downloads perspective is still growing. I think revenue is slightly down, but like, you know, we had that huge COVID boost. So, I mean, the general trajectory is still like, you know, up and to the right. So I'm not too worried about the games industry overall over a longer time horizon. I think there's a little bit of a blip right now, just kind of rationalization with all the excess that happened during ZIRP, a zero interest rate policy environment, and with the COVID boost that we had. But I do think that things are going to rationalize. I think that there's always opportunity. I actually think that a lot of the existing game studios have been shutting down new game development projects, and I think that's been overdone. So anyone who's working on new games now, I think is going to be in good shape. So I'm pretty excited for 24. I don't share the same concerns and worries and kind of hand wringing of a lot of the Chinese executives who, you know, I'm friends with, but like I don't share the same like, yeah, try to go into hibernation for the next 2 to 3 years. I don't think that's the case. I think we're going to be okay.
We will be, especially discovering that there's a new Dragon's Quest. We will definitely be okay. Yeah. I'm excited for 2024 because I'm just hearing, you know, word on the street many times, like this is going to be like the growth year, especially with the supply chain issues that have been affected due to COVID 4 years ago. It's finally being resolved this year. It's catching up. So we'll see what happens. I mean, necessarily, we are better than pre-pandemic levels in the gaming industry. It's just this all happened at once in such a short time span. That's crazy. Like, I wouldn't say much like your optimism, I wouldn't say the industry is failing. It's just definitely, I guess, being corrected back to what it should have been.
Right.
Because COVID turned the industry into a freak accident with everyone becoming millionaires and wealthy off of these games. Like a lot of Roblox developers I know, their greatest success was because of COVID, and now they're all looking for work. So
yeah, I think the thing that people have to keep in mind is that there's gonna be continued growth, but there's also going to be change. And so the people that are going to be left behind are the people who try to stick to the old ways. And I'll give you a very specific example. Okay. So like, basically the other day I decided to get rid of all my old crap, right? Because like, I'm like, okay, I'm just going to go all digital, no more discs. I've got an old Xbox One. I've got my old PS4. I've got like, 100 games. And so I try to sell this stuff on Craigslist, and it turns out, dude, nobody uses Craigslist anymore. I'm like, what? So like, I haven't tried to sell like used stuff in a long time, but then I just took it into a GameStop, and then it's just like, what happened to the games, the local GameStop? Like, it decreased in size to like less than a half of what it used to be. You know what I'm saying? And so like, and then they were talking about how some of the new consoles are just going to be digital only. And so I think that, these things, there's change, right? And so whether it's shift from physical to digital, whether it's change from like the kinds of platforms with like Craigslist doesn't work anymore. So I don't know what the new thing is. Maybe it's Facebook Markets or something.
Facebook Marketplace.
Is that right? Okay. Yeah. So I'm not even on Facebook at all anymore. So like, I wouldn't know, but like the point being that, we're in an industry where there's going to be a lot of changes happening. And if you try to stick to the old crap, like digital or like physical discs, Craigslist, all the old stuff, then you're going to get left behind. You got to like jump onto the new stuff, to AI, to like all the new trends in the industry. And I think anyone who does that, you're going to be fine.
Yeah, it just makes me more amped up and excited for 2024 because we've seen a lot of change this year alone. Mm-hmm. And it's only going to get tenfold in next year, especially with AI and this whole new shift focus on mobile. Maybe it's not a good thing, both of these subjects, but we'll see what happens because it's going to be a very dynamic year.
Yeah, for sure.
As you mentioned, like digital consoles, it was really hard for me to find a PlayStation 5 that had like a disc slot. It was so hard. it was easy for me to find a digital only PlayStation 5. I couldn't. Yeah. I'm old school. I prefer my disc. But okay. I'm actually getting to that point where I'm like, I don't need disc.
Yeah, I'm already there. I got rid of all the discs. Are gone. I only kept one game, which is Sekiro. Shadows.
Yeah.
Just because like the disc box is so cool and stuff like that. So I kept that
one. Dude, that game is so cool. It's probably my favorite Souls game, honestly. I'm gonna be honest, the reason why I wanted a disc PlayStation was for this is how old I am, was so I can play Blu-ray movies on it. Okay. And I don't even know if PlayStation 5 does that. Okay. I don't even know if it still does that.
Right.
Well, that wraps up all the news from me.
Okay.
So on your side, what have you been playing?
So I actually got Diablo 4 on the PS5. Been playing that. I've been going through this like exploration of co-op games. And so I've been trying to find co-op games that can be played locally, like couch co-op, not like, individual co-op. And it turns out, like, there aren't really a lot of games that you can do that. I think there's, like, Original Sin 2, which, it does, like, the cross-screen. I think Diablo 4 is probably the better one. There's, like, Old Gauntlet, right, very few games where you can play, like, four players. There's, like, the new Warhammer game, which is, like, really bad. It's just, like, the worst, terribly balanced and, like, just a really bad game. But, like... I've been trying to develop a thesis in terms of opportunities to build co-op games in the future. And so I've been checking out those games. But the main one I've been playing right now with the wife is Diablo 4. Another game that I've been playing on mobile just as like a kind of like a mechanic and a type of game I'm setting is called Block Jam 3D on mobile, just as like a variation of like a match game. And I continue to try to keep my skills up with at least one competitive game. And so I've been trying to continue playing Wild Rift on mobile. That's for me, like I love MOBAs. I can't play League of Legends on PC anymore just because it requires too much time and my reflexes are just too slow. But like on mobile, like, and for Wild Rift, I think I'm okay. But what about you, Arthur?
So the free game I mentioned earlier on Epic Games, funny enough, I've been playing that the entire week, Ghost Runner. Ghost Runner is this really cool, like fast-paced, engaging cyberpunk game that really nails the cyberpunk atmosphere. It just, I guess you can kind of consider like a roguelite, but it's just a hack and slash, and I really, really love hack and slashes. And alongside Ghost Runner, I was also playing Ghost Runner 2, the sequel that came out to Steam. Personally, though, I prefer the original Ghost Runner, so I'm glad that's free today for everyone to pick up right now if you listen to this podcast today. But I know definitely both of us next week, the games we'll be playing and we'll report, it's going to be probably the same thing. Rika,
Dragon Quest. Yeah.
And Dragon so yeah, that's pretty much it from my side.
Sounds good. All right then, Arthur, that wraps up number 5. We did it. We got here. We, you know, committed to 5 episodes. We're here for our audience. Guys, you're going to have to support us. You know, if you want to see more episodes, please subscribe on YouTube. And you can always catch the podcast, which seems to be doing a little bit better. But anyway, with that, that's it. And hopefully we will catch you all next week. Catch y'all
later. Technically next year.
Yeah, next year. Bye, everybody.
Bye.